Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Welcome. You have entered the realm of 1111 Talk Radio. Your host is Simran. It's time to discover your own language with the universe. Empower yourself, broaden your mind, open your heart, and discover who you are. Now, here's your host, Simran.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm excited to have today's show. My guest is Jason Gregory, who I have had on before with all of his books, actually, Enlightenment Now, The Science and Practice of Humility, and most recently, Fasting the Mind. Today, we are going to be discussing his next book, Effortless Living, Wu Wei and the Spontaneous State of Natural Harmony. And I'm excited to dive into it. I find his work to be truly enlightening in terms of how he brings together so many different philosophies, religions, his own innate knowing, and is able to put into words so much of what individuals may be experiencing or may want to bring into their own experience. So before we go into that, I do want to mention that the latest issue of 1111 magazine has released. It is beautiful and inspiring. It is themed Just Breathe, which is something that we could all do a little bit more of these days. And it could be in support of you moving more into a space of the effortless mind as well. We are here to breathe, to find our nature and our natural knowing. And the only way we can do that is to stop. So I'm going to dive right into a little bit of Jason Gregory's book to give you a taste of what he has to say. The experience of effortless mind is something we commonly attribute to athletes, artists, writers, poets, and philosophers. This state of consciousness is not bound by the limitations of the mind, but rather finds infinite expression and laser-like focus within the limited framework of our mental capacities and lives. We generally think of this mental state as being in the zone. The ability to focus the mind for a sustained period of time evokes the state of being in the zone, which allows us to achieve the impossible. This occurs because the conscious mind shuts down to allow the wisdom of the unconscious mind and body to take over. Muscle memory takes over while the sense of you doing the task has been reduced. This is just the beginning of understanding the deepening into effortless living and how you can allow yourself more and more into the spontaneous state of natural harmony. Jason Gregory is a teacher and international speaker specializing in the fields of Eastern and Western philosophy, comparative religion, metaphysics, and ancient cultures. He is the author of Fasting the Mind, Enlightenment Now, and The Science and Practice of Humility. He divides his time between Asia and Australia and does have two upcoming tours and retreats in India later in the year. Footsteps of the Master's Tour is one of them, and Fasting the Mind Retreat is another. So you definitely want to check those out when you go to his website, jasongregory.org. Welcome, Jason, back to 1111 Talk Radio. It is a pleasure, as always, to have you with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back on, Simran. I always love our conversations, and it's great to connect with you always.
Well, I have been on my own Rebel Road tour the past few years, and that resulted in a period of stopping for a long, I'd say 2 to 3 years, of really just allowing a space of stillness. And a lot came up through that. First, from that tour myself of being the rebel, where I really did speak to people with a knowingness that we're not here to do anything. We're not here to try to change or fix or heal a society, that we are here to allow the spontaneous creativity that is natural within us to bubble up, and that in itself will do whatever it needs to do in the world. And that so much is spoken in your book when you're talking about how we step more and more into a place of natural harmony, and we allow Wu Wei to kind of take charge of our lives rather than this constant forcing and doing that we have become in our world. Talk a little bit about the doingness and how our intellectualizing of society, how our conditioning has really altered how we approach life and how we are actually contributing to the chaos and the undoing of ourselves in this way, which also, in a sense, could be part of the natural order of things, depending on how we look at it as well.
It's a great question, Simran. I think we all grow up. I think no matter whether the East or the West, we've all sort of been brought up these days where you know, doing is the mantra. You know, we need to do. We need to be useful, or else, you know, why do we live our life? But you know, when we take a step back and we take a look at nature, nature just takes its natural course without, you know, control, effort, force, or anything else. There's just a natural order to nature, which there's this homeostasis with nature. There's a natural harmony there, and I think the problem, a big problem with us now as humans, is that we don't really consider ourselves as part of nature. So we just think that we're on this planet, you know, and nature is something that we just use for our own benefit, again, which distorts our relationship. Not only with the planet, but in some sense with each other as well. So, you know, we have this tendency to think of, you know, there's us and then there's nature, and then there's just us and there's everybody else. So we're these isolated people, and everything else, you know, there's just this blind force moving through the universe instead of an sort of an intelligent spontaneity that's moving through nature, and we are that nature. So, you know, but Lao Tzu, like, you know, I mentioned Lao Tzu a lot in the book, the Great Taoist Sage, because his focus was on, you know, why don't we just allow life to happen as nature, as you know, we allow nature to run its course. How come we don't allow humans just to run their course, like, without putting any effort in, without just, you know, just in a state of non-doing, wu-wei, like, so... what we see is, from Lao Tzu's perspective, is if we leave people alone to their own, you know, to follow their own path, then nature sort of, it just unfolds instead of interfering and trying to impose our own, you know, perception of life upon other people. That's when the problems begin, you know, and I think that we don't understand that in our modern world. You know, we have nations and governments that think that we need to tell other cultures what to do and how to be according to our own point of view, when that's completely the wrong way of going about it. And I think, Simran, that's affected us on a deep individual level as well.
Well, when we look at the individual and you're saying we need to follow our own path, right there is part of the issue, because we've all been conditioned. There is a lack of trust that is kind of threading through our culture and our world. And we often don't know what our own path is because we're so used to following what everyone else is saying, or we've become this homogenized world, or we've bought into the idea of what success and happiness are supposed to look at as an end to a goal. So to start off, you know, talk a little bit about the hot versus cold cognition and how we move from being these living machines into relaxing a little bit more into opening that naturalness of even just stopping for a minute to question who we've become.
Yeah, great question. Well, you know, when we look at hot and cold cognition is basically the cognitive control centers in our brain. So the cold cognition would be is located in the prefrontal cortex, and you know, we could associate that with the intellect and discernment. So, you know, this, you know, Simran, I'm Jason, you know, black, white, good, bad, so forth and so on. And so we've you know, devised a whole society about promoting the intellect, about boosting the intellect, about being strong intellectually and having, you know, being very cognitively aware, and it's all based on cognitive intelligence. When we look at the older, more primal cognition, which is the hot cognition, that's where more of the naturalness of the world comes into being. That's kind of like our natural nature, is the hot cognition. Like, so for example, you can open and close your hands without having to think about it. You can't intellectualize that, but you can just do it, you know. So, and to explain sort of how the hot cognition works is that when you see someone who's in the zone, like an athlete or maybe a musician, who are just in this effortless flow that you know, it's hard to replicate. You know, you look at it and you go, wow, like, how are they in that? And that's just from years of training. And that training has become second nature, just like opening and closing my hand. And so that's how this spontaneity comes about of itself. That's what our hot cognition is. That's how we, you know, for example, like comedians are a good example of this. When someone might say something and they're very witty and spontaneously, they have a spontaneous wit where they could say something very funny spontaneously. And, you know, someone said the same thing to us, it might take a bit of effort for us to think of something witty to say, but that's just their nature. That comes from years of working on comedy and so forth and so on. And so you have this difference between the hot and cold cognition. And, you know, the cold cognition, in a sense, you know, you could do a lot of training. So it's useful to train your hot cognition. But the problem is that once you've overemployed for the cold cognition, it sort of gets in the way of your performance just having its natural harmony, its natural flow. So, you know, we need techniques and methods to shut the cold cognition down. And that was a big focus within especially Eastern thought and Taoist philosophy, is about how do we shut that down. You know, obviously meditation and so forth and so on are good practices in that, to try and loosen the grip on the cold cognition. But the problem is, as you're alluding to, Simran, is that we have a society that's bought into hook, line and sinker, into that we should just be intellectually intelligent. And that's all that matters. So naturalness and spontaneity don't really matter in this world now. So that's basically saying that nature doesn't matter in this world. So,
well, and we do seem to be, as a species, we seem to be reflecting that onto nature, unfortunately, in many, many ways. Wu Wei is translated into non-doing, non-action, or effortless action. And if you tell most people, particularly in Western societies, that we are here to be in a place of non-doing and non-action, they probably would go into a state of panic, because then they would wonder, what am I supposed to be doing? And it probably would create pandemonium. It certainly does seem to create anxiety in many people to have to stop sometimes because they don't know what to do with themselves. Talk a little bit about Wu Wei and also the paradox in that non-doing does not necessarily mean that you are not doing anything, but it's a different approach to it. It's a paradox of sorts.
It is a paradox of sorts because, you know, when you think of yourself as doing something, you're the doer of something, then you are in a sense doing. There's a great phrase in the Bhagavad Gita, where it mentions in Sanskrit, it mentions nishkarma karma, which actually means not being attached to the fruit of your own labor. So that's, again, coming back to the hot and cold cognition, what we were talking about, is if you've loosened the grip on your cold cognition, or we could even say the ego here in this sense, then you could be acting, but you're not attached to the actions that or the fruits of your own labor, as the Bhagavad Gita said. So that's kind of that way of effortless action. So, you know, if we look at martial arts, for example, martial artists have a very beautiful technique where it seems like their actions are very effortless, and that just comes from years of training. But that's kind of a metaphor for how we can be in life. We can be very effortless in the actions just in our ordinary life. But, you know, that's the paradox of non-doing. And, you know, for a lot of people, when they hear non-doing, they get really anxious, because we have built a world that said that, you know, we have to do something. And, you know, Lao Tzu's point was that, you know, according to who, and also oftentimes when we allow things just to be as they will, things will take their natural course. So when we leave things alone to do, you know, to be as they will, they'll take their natural course. And we've all experienced that, where we might have had, like, you know, what you get these days, there's a lot of people because of social media. Someone might, a troll, for example, might throw an unintelligent tweet at you or on Facebook or something like this. And people have a tendency just to do straight away. And so what that means is they have a tendency to act, when you could be like, for example, you could be like George Ivanovich Gurdjieff's grandfather, who told Gurdjieff, he said that, you know, when you have a situation like that, what you should do is, even though you want to react, you should put the brakes or pump the brakes and come back in 24 hours and see if you need to react at all. And most of the times we don't, you know. So, you know, a lot of people have just got to get out of that tendency of acting unconsciously, and also embracing this ability to just allow something. You know, you don't, obviously there are going to be moments where your action is required, but most of the time our action isn't required. So we can just allow things to take their natural course without having, you know, a biased opinion or our own personal agendas projected onto a situation. So, you know, it's very important.
You know, they say that when it comes to chaos, the greatest action to take in chaos is nothing. And because that's actually what will disintegrate the chaos. And I've learned just in my past few years of really stopping how the thoughts have risen, and there's been this idea to do something or this idea to build something. And yet when I stopped to really look at who it was that was making the thought, it was the personality, it was the I. But there was a deeper part of me that was saying, no, wait, just wait. And so for people to start to recognize the I that is trying to be in charge, the personality that has been conditioned, is an important piece in this, especially when it comes to Wu Wei and moving into a space of more effortless living. Can you talk about how so? And we have a couple of minutes before break, so just to let you know our timing.
That's a great point, Simone, and you're exactly right. It is that, you know, a lot of the time when we do examine our own mind, it is that sense of, okay, Jason wants to do this, he wants to achieve this and that. And then you're off down the rabbit hole, and then who knows where you'll go, you know. So it's a lot of the times when we do just pause and we allow life to just run its course, naturally, you over time, you'll see if that action was really necessary or required. In some cases, maybe that you've got some sort of intuitive impulse, which might be a little bit different to your ego saying to yourself, look, I need to achieve this, I need to achieve that. That's a little bit different. But, you know, we have to learn to observe our mind to such a subtle degree that we can see that most of the doing that we do in the world is ego-driven. It's, you know, we're trying to achieve certain things, we're trying to be a certain personality, and we're trying to be special. When in a sense, you know, none of us are really special on a universal level. I don't mean that in a very negative way. I mean that sort of in the sense that, you know, we're all innately special, but when we look at the great cosmic sphere, you know, there's the personality in a sense is so little, you know, it doesn't have a large bearing on, you know, what's happening in Saturn, for example, you know. So, you know, we have to get down to that subtle level where we do start to recognize that, okay, it is the personality that's driving a lot of my actions. What happens if I start to observe that and begin to cut the juice off that fuels those actions?
When we shut down our analytical thinking mind, we achieve greatness. In India, this is known as grace, and in ancient Asian thought, it was understood that this grace comes about because of the ability to see that everything is done when left undone. Yet people were perplexed as how a state of effortlessness within the mind can be attained with effort. The effortless mind of being in the zone is not something we can actively seek to attain, because this requires no effort. Being in the zone is an art that is evoked by essentially doing nothing to attain it. From this perspective, even effort is cleansed of trying and striving, because the sense of I is not there. This is from the book Effortless Living, Wu Wei and the Spontaneous State of Natural Harmony by Jason Gregory, a teacher and international speaker specializing in the fields of Eastern and Western philosophy, comparative religion, metaphysics, and ancient cultures. He is the author of Fasting the Mind, Enlightenment Now, and the Science of and Practice of Humility. You can find out more about him at jasongregory.org and definitely look up his two upcoming retreats, A Footsteps of the Masters Tour in India and Fasting the Mind Retreat, both of them coming up later in the year. We'll be right back with Jason Gregory after these messages.
Have you seen 1111? Do you wonder why certain numbers keep showing up in your life? 11, 111, 22, 33, 444. People all over the world are seeing 1111 and learning the language of universal communication. Subscribe to 1111 Magazine today, 1111mag.com. 1111 Magazine is a bi-monthly online publication that offers a rich multi-sensory experience. Engage with experts and topics of consciousness. Become enlightened, empowered, and energized so you live a passionate and authentic life of conscious choices. 1111 Magazine, a daily staple for lifting the mindset, expanding the heart, and experiencing greater aliveness. 1111 Magazine. Order now at www.1111mag.com. 1111mag.com.
Do you want more out of life? Tired of settling in relationships, your career, health, or finances? Want to experience greater aliveness? I am Simran. I support people in listening to their conversations with the universe, the guiding signs, symbols, and synchronicity. I mentor people to anchor in trust, love, and confidence to live their heart's desires. Let me guide you in embracing the challenges and the obstacles so you embody and integrate the gifts they bring. No more human doing. You are here for being, bounteously and abundantly. Experience your soul's natural rhythm, your powerful essence. Don't shrink back any longer. Release the struggle. Learn how to let go. Create in different dimensions. Transform separateness, grief, anxiety, anger, and chaos into living your destiny. Connect with me at IamSimran.com. Live more freely, spontaneously, and joyfully. Don't conform. Live a life of courage. Let's start now. Through my online courses, mentoring programs, or one-on-one coaching, it's time to change your world. Connect at IamSimran.com.
You are listening to 1111 Talk Radio. Simran is an award-winning author, publisher of 1111 Magazine, powerful speaker of wisdom, and a life mentor. Find out more at IamSimran.com. Now, back to 1111 Talk Radio.
Once again, definitely check out this month's issue of 1111 Magazine entitled Just Breathe. There are some beautiful people that are featured. Anita Wing Lee took 13 months of her life and went out on the road just organically. So it very much fits in with what we're talking about today with Jason Gregory. She speaks about tribe and how in every country that she went to, she was able to find people and things that supported her and what tribe really, really means. Jalaja Bonheim speaks about circle work and the importance of creating love-infused circles to allow the layers of tension and fear to melt away, even when we didn't know we were holding them. Leon Good is talking about the power of beliefs, Andrea Matthews, Good versus Evil, and Cookie Washington is taking us into a dialogue of black and white where she brings together a diverse group of artists to talk about social issues through their art. In addition, you will find out my own intention statements, prayers, forgiveness, and articles that I share. And if it's too much for you to read the free magazine online and take in all that goodness, I now have 1111 on audio, which also includes audio meditations, intentions, along with life coaching and action prompts. And that's all for $97 for the entire year. So it is a jam-packed, very full experience of self-work and self-care that you can partake in as you go through your busy, busy life. My guest today is Jason Gregory, and he is the author of the latest book, Effortless Living, Wu Wei and the Spontaneous State of Natural Harmony. It is about learning how to step more into your natural harmony and how we have been conditioned from life and how we have bought into many different ideologies and thought forms that take us away from our own state of being nature. So definitely pick that up. Find out more about his two upcoming tours to India, Fasting the Mind and Footstep of the Masters, along with his other books, Fasting the Mind, Enlightenment Now, and The Science and Practice of Humility. Wu Wei is not an ideology, theology, or something you need to believe in. On the contrary, Wu Wei can only be known through your own experience. Then it simply strengthens your trust in Wu Wei. The natural order of growth and harmony depends upon allowing life to take its course without conscious interference. This is how the Tao flows when Wu Wei is experienced. Many people resist the very thought of allowing things to take place in life because from our perspective, we can't see how anything could be achieved in that way. But if we are more observant, we discover that each and every attempt to categorically control our life is invariably upended by the spontaneity of natural experience. No human being is above this universal spontaneity, and yet many people seek to control life down to the finest detail, failing to realize that the very things that shaped their identity were beyond their control. What a powerful passage in your book, Jason. It truly talks about how we are constantly trying to control who we are, and yet if I look back in my own life, even in those moments of control, nature took over, life took over, and still diverted me and directed me into the places I was meant to go. So when we talk about falling into this natural harmony, even in that, there's nothing that we have to do, but there is a sense of awareness that we must come to in terms of how we have bought into the ideas of ambition and success and the various things that we are to achieve in this life based on how parents have conditioned or society has conditioned. And you talk quite a bit about how our children are to be left alone and how we are the cause of our own disease by even controlling that, even creating that hierarchy within our systems. Talk a little bit about that and how that hierarchy, just from the time of a child, leads up to the greater hierarchies of government, of finance, of all the different methods and structures that we have in our world.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when we look at, this goes back to Lao Tzu's view of natural systems, that, you know, you don't really have a hierarchical order dictating over nature. This is more so of, I mean, there is, you know, obviously there is natural parenting, but I think the parenting now has got to a point where, you know, we are sort of trying to influence our children and that according to our own belief systems. And you know, some people might say that that's right, but, you know, from the point of view of Lao Tzu or a Taoist, their idea is just to leave them alone to you know, to live their life and you know, see how they blossom, see where they go from there. And so from that view, like Lao Tzu's point is that all of this socialization, so all of this conditioning that we have, you know, we tend to turn into this artificial person. And from an artificial person, then we have certain systems and so forth and so on, that we have artificial systems, and which leads up into government and all sorts of, even in religion and academia and all of these societies, we have a sort of a hierarchical order that's very artificial. It's built on you know, the human mind. It's not built on the natural order of the world. So, you know, yeah, Lao Tzu's point is to get back to allowing life just to be as it will without having a hierarchical order, because that's not the way nature is. Now, you know, how do we do that? Obviously, we have to go back to being more trust-based over not having much trust. So, you know, some of the reasons we have government and all of these systems of hierarchy is because we don't have an innate trust of each other. You know, that goes back into the parenting, where parents don't trust their children to follow their own path, so we impose our will on them. Government systems don't trust the society, or the individual, I should say, to follow their own path and you know, grow as they, as nature intended. So, you know, we devise all of these systems to cultivate the world according to a certain philosophy or system or whatever, whoever decides that, you know. So parents would decide that for the children, government would decide it for the society, religion would decide it for their followers, and so forth and so on. So Lao Tzu's point of view is that we need to get back to the uncarved block. He uses the uncarved block as a metaphor, which means to get back to your raw nature, back to allowing life just to be as it will, to trust the world, and to get rid of all of this socialization that we've all been indoctrinated with, where, you know, as opposed to Lao Tzu, you have Confucius, who loves self-cultivation. So he loves self-cultivation, he loves socialization, he loves authoritarian parenting and so forth and so on. Not to throw Confucius totally under the bus, because, you know, he does have a lot of wisdom, but there are a lot of things that his philosophy relates to our modern philosophy, where we have a very, you know, artificial, systemized based society that dictates to the naturalness of the individual. So where Lao Tzu would say, let's pump the brakes on that and go back towards the uncarved block. You know, Confucius has his block is the carving and polishing technique of self-cultivation. So, you know, it all comes back to trust. It comes back to trusting the way of the world and believing in that the Tao will run its course without us having to create an artificial system to dictate the terms to the individual.
Well, and I think anyone hearing you right now and going into the thought form of, oh my goodness, that would create anarchy, or that would create even more chaos, that in itself illustrates the degree of trust that the individual may or may not have, just by mere thought that things would fall apart. In the book, you do talk about, though, government systems and different structures, when they go into chaos, it actually breeds more patriotism. And I think, in a sense, we are seeing that even in the world today with many of the issues. It may look and feel like chaos, but in a sense, it too could be the natural unfolding of trying to re-self-organize. Talk a little bit of your view in regard to that, when we see things like the women's movement, or we see the young people rising up against the guns. Is that part of the natural disorganizing or organizing that is taking place?
It's a good point. Good point, Simran. And I guess it could be, you know, if we are to trust completely, then yes, you're right. We should trust even if it's something that, you know, someone might disagree with. Like, I know a lot of people in America support gun rights, for example, but there is a movement to get rid of guns. And look, I live in Australia, and nobody has guns here. And I, to be honest, I don't really understand why people have guns in the US. But I understand it's part of the Constitution, this and that. And it's not my piece to say anything. So, but getting back to your point. When it's funny, because, you know, I mentioned in my book about what's called Kropotkin's anarchy, and that goes back to a evolutionary theorist, the Russian evolutionary theorist Peter Kropotkin, and he believed that, you know, when in anarchy there's actually like a natural order. You know, it was actually called Kropotkin's anarchy. So he believes when society goes into anarchy, then naturally, it, like you said, things self-organize, they reorganize, and it, there's a this natural unfolding that happens. And that's very much in relation to Taoist thought as well. As I mentioned in the book, there's this natural sort of, we go into this chaos, but out of that chaos, an order naturally evolves. And, you know, we've seen this, you know, for anyone who's been attentive in their own life, or even in the history of the human race, there has been this sort of this ebb and flow between chaos and order, where it's like this sort of this natural growth continuum that is constantly going on. So I think I think you're right to what you were saying, where we, you know, we have a lot of these, the women's movement, the guns, getting rid of the guns and this and that. Maybe this is society trying to reorganize itself, for better or worse, we don't know. you know, that only time will tell. But I guess that that's just a natural flow of where the energy is moving at the moment. And, you know, if we are to trust the Tao completely, then things will be as they should be, you know, ultimately. So
you also talk in the book a bit about personal agenda. And when we look at things like politics, when we look at war, when we look at the banking industry or finance, there can't, or business, there can be, in most cases, personal agenda that actually drives that. And that is born out of ambition and some of the desires for life, the desires for comfort that we have been shown. There's a piece in the book where you talk about Mabel Collins' occult classic, Light on the Path, where she speaks to four precepts. The first is kill out ambition. The second precept is kill out desire of life. The third is kill out desire of comfort. And the fourth is work as those work who are ambitious, respect life as those who desire it, and be happy as those who live for happiness. That to me was so powerful because it says so much just in those four statements in terms of who is really approaching the work, whether it's the personality or whether it's the essence or isness that is really approaching the work. And talk a little bit about who is really present when we're working from the first three versus working from the last.
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah. Well, the first three precepts from Light on the Path by Mabel Collins is basically, that's targeted, I would say, at the ego. So you're trying to kill out the ambition, the personality, I should say, or ego, whatever. Kill out the ambition, kill out desire of life, and also kill out desire of comfort. Is to try and get out of that tendency that we have, you know, especially in the modern day, we have this tendency to think that we're entitled to live a certain way of life and to constantly pursue ambition, constantly, in a very egotistical manner, which actually, in a sense, destroys the world. Because, you know, if someone gets in our way and on our path, then we get very anxious and, or in some sense, violent. And the fourth precept is basically the coming into recognition that the life is naturally unfolding. And if you overly identify with your ambition, with your desires, then that's a surefire way into suffering. So this comes back to the training about what we were talking about before with the hot and cold cognition, about ways to downregulate the sense of I, or to turn the volume down on your ego and just allow life to flow naturally, and to identify more with that hot cognitive state within yourself, more of the heart within yourself. Then what happens is that there's a principle in Taoist philosophy called Li, which is kind of a natural, an organic pattern, sort of a natural psychological archetype that you have, that you begin to express in the world, but only when you start to kill out ambition and desires and desire for comfort. So when you start to get away from all of those things that sort of soften you up, I mean, I should say, like, you know, cradle the ego, then you begin to actually bring forth what's truly within you. So, you know, a lot of people say it's difficult to live by the fourth precept, but it's not really. If you begin to do the work to turn the volume down on your ego and allow just the naturalness within yourself to do the work without you identifying with it. And, you know, you'd know this because you're a writer, Simran, and I know this because I'm a writer. When you get into the flow of writing, there is no real you that's in this state of writing. You know, you're just writing. Once you get into that sort of effortless flow, it just naturally happens without, you know, the sense of you and I, you know, giving each other cheers and having drinks after a day at the office. You know, it's not really like that. There is that natural order there.
To act according to nature requires becoming receptive to the forces of the cosmos, which can only be received in the complete stilling of the mind. The process of settling the ripples of the mind is known as nirodha in Sanskrit. The stilling of the mind is the key objective of many forms of the meditative practices and Eastern wisdom. Yet paradoxically, the objective can never be attained if it is thought of as a goal to achieve. This is because the stillness of the mind that many people hope to attain is actually our natural state, right here and now, and not at some future destination. But this realization is veiled by the hypnosis that we have acquired from the external world. This is from Jason Gregory's book, Effortless Living, Wu Wei and the Spontaneous State of Natural Harmony. You can get this book, as well as his other books, Fasting the Mind, Enlightenment Now, and The Science and Practice of Humility, anywhere books are sold, or go to his website, jasongregory.org, and also look up his blogs, his videos, in addition to his two upcoming retreats, Footsteps of the Masters Tour in India and Fasting the Mind, also in India. Those will be later this year. We'll be right back with Jason Gregory after these messages.
Have you seen 1111? Do you wonder why certain numbers keep showing up in your life? 11, 111, 22, 33, 444. People all over the world are seeing 1111 and learning the language of universal communication. Subscribe to 1111 Magazine today, 1111mag.com. 1111 Magazine is a bi-monthly online publication that offers a rich multi-sensory experience. Engage with experts in topics of consciousness. Become enlightened, empowered, and energized so you live a passionate and authentic life of conscious choices. 1111 Magazine, a daily staple for lifting the mindset, expanding the heart, and experiencing greater aliveness. 1111 Magazine. Order now at www.1111mag.com. 1111mag.com.
Are you an artist, healer, teacher, author, speaker, or coach? A wellness or holistic practitioner or energy worker? Maybe you want to be. Do you desire to serve the world, share your gifts, live your dreams? I am Simran, host of 1111 Talk Radio, and I invite you to the vision of oneness. Could you use a community of support, more financial flow with less effort? Would you like to receive so you have more to give? Be a world changer, world server, do-gooder. Be a new paradigm thinker and a conscious change agent. A part of a growing community creating collective streams of prosperity and wellness. By simply serving yourself, you serve others. Feel great, have more energy, sleep better, gently detox, lose unhealthy weight, and build strength. It's time for more freedom and financial flow. The vision of oneness embodies unconditional giving, commitment, simplicity, and receiving. We are a collective new way of being in commerce and creative cash flow. Learn more at thevisionofoneness.com. Register now, and a member will help you begin today. Visionofoneness.com.
You are listening to 1111 Talk Radio. Simran is an award-winning author, publisher of 1111 Magazine, powerful speaker of wisdom, and a life mentor. Find out more at IamSimran.com. Now, back to 1111 Talk Radio.
Welcome back. We are interviewing Jason Gregory on his latest book, Effortless Living. And before we get back into that conversation, I will invite you to visit my own website and check out my own books and art. My first book is Conversations with the Universe. It is about the signs, symbols, and synchronicities that speak back to you all of the time about you. My second book is Your Journey to Enlightenment. It is stepping out of conformity and conditioning and stepping more into your rebel nature, that of the innocent, wondrous, and curious divine child. And my third book, Your Journey to Love, is about discovering the ultimate soulmate, who is you, your shadow, your light, and the inner child within you that is ready to play and create in a world of spontaneity. So definitely check them out. They are a blend of the human experience along with divine wisdom so that you feel like you're walking beside yourself while also beside your higher self. You can find out all of those at IamSimran.com. When you trust the universe, you become one with it. Wu Wei dawns upon the individual in the same way, because when we let go of control, we gain the indescribable power in virtue of Tao. This relation of trust and oneness is the principle of living Wu Wei. When you are humble enough to leave things alone, you begin to feel a sense of unity intuitively. Lao Tzu's words in Tao Te Ching reveal this trust for the individual whose inner ear is attuned to the rhythmic silence of the Tao. The wisdom of Lao Tzu was not to intellectualize oneness, but instead to feel it and to know it. Jason, when we talk about many of the concepts like non-doing or oneness or even spontaneity and natural harmony, we live in such a mental world now, in such a material world now, that oftentimes they just rest as intellectual concepts rather than really being in a place where individuals are integrating them and truly feeling them and coming from a place deep within their core or their heart rather than, again, trying to do them. And the mind, the deceptive intelligence, can fool us into thinking that we are being them when we are actually still doing them. Talk a little bit about that easy slide down into the place of integration from intellectualism so that people understand how to loosen the mind. And this may speak to your previous book, Fasting the Mind, a little bit as well, in terms of a method or protocol or a way to begin allowing that deeper integration so that there's more being rather than doing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, it does tie in with fasting the mind because, you know, it's fasting the mind, you know, the phrase itself did come from Zhuangzi, one of the great Taoists. And so to get sort of into that Wu Wei state, into the natural harmony of just allowing things to happen, you need to essentially shut the mind off or train yourself to give yourself an opportunity each day to turn the mind off. So obviously meditation is very important there, and specifically still point meditation, or, you know, we could say Vipassana, insight meditation, is very important just to turn the what we would say, you know, if we look at the nervous system, there's the parasympathetic nervous system and the sympathetic nervous system. And so the sympathetic nervous system is more to do with the doing aspect. So that's activated when we're always doing. So the reason why many people feel depleted every day is because we're only accessing that part of ourselves in our waking hours. And the parasympathetic nervous system is the deep relaxation part of the nervous system, which revitalizes even our intellectual capacities, but it also brings our mind into equanimity. So, you know, we access that when we sleep, but we also should access that when we are in our waking hours. So it's important for us to, you know, integrate meditation and also methods of trying to, you know, discipline your life a little bit, getting away from social media, beginning to not look at the digital blue light, you know, the blue light and the digital screens that we all see at nighttime and that, so that allows for a deeper sleep and deeper relaxation and allows our nervous system to revitalize itself instead of, you know, turning the volume up on that all the time. And, you know, also simple things like getting away from, you know, large copious amounts of caffeine, you know. So, you know, I even talk about in the book about, you know, getting away from caffeine altogether, because we have to develop ways of developing yin, because we live in a yin deficient world, actually, because, you know, the yang part of us, the masculine part, is the active part. It's the part that we always access. And so it's a doing part. And what happens there is when you're doing all the time, you're not nourishing yourself. So yin, the feminine aspect, the non-doing aspect, actually nourishes the active element. So we are supposed to be mainly in yin, which is definitely against the way that our modern society is structured. So, you know, we have to learn to implement yin practices within our day that keep us, you know, revitalized, but also alert without being active. So, you know, that's very important. And, you know, meditation is a good example. Disciplined diet can help. Even learning just to exercise 20 minutes a day will help you to settle the mind down, bring it back into a state of effortlessness. Because, you know, for example, running will bring you back into an effortless state. And, you know, just these simple practices will bring you back into that yin state, Simran.
You talk in the book, Effortless Living, also not just about the caffeine, but about sugars or about distraction in general, and how we are conditioned, or the mind kind of is programmed to fall into that place of taking us into a distraction, which can be sometimes, an idea, I need to go get busy with doing this, or a reaction of I need to respond to this person on Facebook because they just ticked me off, or I don't feel like exercising or meditating, so I'm going to go get busy and do something else, as opposed to stilling and taking on these more conscious practices to even the mind and slowly move towards that place of equanimity. Talk a little bit about how distraction plays a role in keeping us caught up in the cognitive machine of ourselves and of the world.
Yep. Well, yeah, distraction, you know, I think that the whole culture is built on distraction now. Like, you know, the entertainment industry is one of the biggest industries in the world, and nothing against entertainment. But the problem is that we've developed a habit now where we just seek to fill the mind up. So we're always seeking just to, you know, I can't stand boredom. Okay, so what do? We look for distraction because we're in the habit of filling the mind up or keeping it agitated, which then, you know, leads to further problems down the track, because then, you know, all we do then is start to seek distraction. So distraction keeps our mind sort of in this state where it's very agitated and we can't sit still. You know, you see people fidgeting or you see people playing with their phone, and this is social media and digital technology has become an addiction, I believe, for a lot of people. But, you know, I think that what we're really addicted to is more so just distracting our mind from the reality of life. You know, so we don't want to really sit and just look at life in its rawest form. We don't want to sit there and just hear ourselves, hear our breath, or feel the ground that we walk on. We've sort of stepped away from pure naturalness, and we've gone head on into just distracting our mind 100%. So, you know, nothing against a bit of entertainment, but I think that we've sold the whole lot on just being distracted. So all we're doing is we're going to our job to make money so that we can afford to live a distracted life, which is totally against the natural way of the world, where we need to actually start to refrain from distracting our mind and begin to start to experience reality as it truly is.
We have about 2 minutes left, and I do want to touch on equanimity. I know that my own experience the last few years brought me to this place, and most people might not consider having that even keel state where you're not really experiencing highs or lows to be something that we aspire to. But that is the place where we really are working more in natural harmony, where we really are in more of a flow with the universe, where we really are creating from a space beyond the personality and the I. Talk a little bit about your experience or thoughts around equanimity.
Well, equanimity is, I think, the goal for all of us. I mean, it's natural. It's our natural state, really, as opposed to the highs and the lows. So, you know, we're always seeking pleasure and we're always avoiding pain, but what we should be looking for through both is equanimity. We shouldn't be looking just to be pleasured all the time or to avoid pain. We got to seek equanimity. And the thing is, why it's such a, you know, why people don't want to embrace equanimity is because it's a very content state just with the way life is. That's what equanimity is. It's a pure contentment without our consciousness having to be colored with distraction or vice or whatever. You just don't need anything. You're just completely content with the way things are. Now, does that mean that you don't enjoy life anymore? No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that equanimity becomes your anchor in life, and you don't run off into pleasure or avoid pain as much as possible. You just live life with this anchor of equanimity, where you might step into pleasure, or there might be a chance to dive into your pain, but that will only enhance your equanimous mind. So, you know, for me, for myself personally, like insight meditation, specifically Vipassana, has helped for me to be much more equanimous for longer periods in the day, and that benefits my writing, and it benefits my relationships, and, you know, just the life I live in general.
Well, definitely get to know Jason Gregory if you don't. He is a brilliant mind and a leading change agent when it comes to allowing individuals to discover more of themselves. You can find out more about his books, Fasting the Mind, Enlightenment Now, and The Science and Practice of Humility, along with his latest, Effortless Living, at his website, jasongregory.org, along with two upcoming tours, Footsteps of the Masters and Fasting the Mind, both in India later this year. The books are also available on Amazon or where books are sold. And I'll leave you with one last piece of his book, Effortless Living. It is the feeling of oneness that we really seek, a feeling of oneness within ourselves that is never disturbed by the fluctuations of life in the outside world. When we are disturbed, we lose sight of our innate love. We never truly love the world in this way, because we condemn it on the basis of our own conditioning. The only way to truly love the world is to trust it, with a trust that cannot be moved by the deluded mind. Trust is the validation that the universe is one and that you do belong. Again, this is from Effortless Living, Wu Wei and the Spontaneous State of Natural Harmony, jasongregory.org. Join me next week with Kaya Ra when we discuss the Sophia Code. I look forward to being with you then. And I am Simran, in love, of love, with love and as love. Be well.
Thank you for opening your mind to a new reality, your heart to greater compassion, and your experience of aliveness with 1111 Talk Radio.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.